at WNST and Baltimore Positive. We're up on episode 150 somehow. We're at State Fair. We're back in Catonsville. We have moved locations from the Frederick Road sort of south side here to the west wall in Catonsville. Don Moeller here for Baltimore Positive, and we've even switched around the artwork here.
We got that little Dave Grohl,
Dave Grohl
little
here.
Snoop.
Dave Grohl, Don Moeller didn't know that Dave Grohl was in Nirvana.
You're going to out me, aren't you?
Yeah, I just think I just did. Well, we're here to
but
educate
I did
people.
Know they were. Hey, come on, I'm an old guy. I did know he was in the Foo Fighters. Do I get credit for that?
But I mean, there was this band called Nirvana, you know?
Okay.
I'm
aware of that. So let's thank our sponsors. We have Fadley's, State Fair, Center Maryland, and a brand new sponsor today, one that I know a little bit about, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors. We're happy to welcome them. So time to buy ourselves. We head to the spring. And Nestor, we love sitting and chatting and talking education with smart people.
Well, let's start with this. We have Dr. Darrell Williams here, but first off,
well, what does he do?
One of a job that you were very involved in, educating young people, Baltimore County Superintendent of Schools. So education is where all this began. On a hot summer day in August of 1982, I marched into Dundalk High School as an incoming sophomore, and Don Moeller was my high school guidance counselor.
And the rest, as they say, is history.
And 38 years later, here we are. So, you know, it was from education. And honestly, you know, Don's marched through education to the superintendent's office, through Baltimore County and all
Absolutely.
Of that. This is where his passion is.
Absolutely.
So on a day like today, well, we can talk politics and we can have mayoral candidates. We can have police commissioners. We can have all political wannabes, controllers, all that stuff. Education is at the heart of all this, and I think we appreciate these conversations more than and a lot of folks like you don't get asked to come out for like an hour or two and say, let's talk about Kerwin and the state of education for people. So we're delighted to have you here.
Glad to
welcome.
Be here. Glad
welcome.
To be here.
Dr. Williams, one of the things we try to do on Baltimore Positive, one of our themes is that who folks were, how they grew up, what lessons they learned in the neighborhood, what lessons they learned at the dinner table, truly become part of who they are. So you've been here, seven or 8 months now. You know, folks certainly are becoming familiar with your name, but they're still being introduced. Tell our listeners who are out there in the car or watching on Facebook, tell a little bit about Darrell Williams, where he grew up, and what childhood was like.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Darrell Williams. So Darrell Williams is a local guy. He's a Washingtonian. Redskins.
They worry me. I knew that. I figured that.
Redskins, Ravens, and I got to give a shout out to Cincinnati because that's where my in-laws are from. But I'm a Washingtonian. I grew up in Washington, D.C., went to school in public schools, loved it, had two working parents, and they worked every day, and the expectation was that we went to school and we did right with the adults in the building. And if we didn't, somehow they found out about it, and not only did we have to deal with the neighbors, we also had to deal with our parents. So school was important. I'm the youngest of three. And shout out to my siblings, much smarter.
Did you ever measure up to them when you're the youngest?
So there's an age difference, and so I always thrive to be like them. But one is much smarter, one is better looking. My sister is, of course, better looking. My brother is much smarter. And they were good role models. They really took care of me. And now they are so proud because I stayed in education almost 32 years. And so that's where I started. In D.C., I went away to school, went to Hampton, where I met my beautiful wife, and came back and taught in D.C. Can you imagine teaching in your own high school where you graduated?
I remember Welcome Back, Cotter.
Yeah.
That's what it was back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Remember that?
So I didn't teach Sweat Hogs or anything like that. But
there you go.
No Sweat Hogs. He didn't know Flea. He did not get Flea. That's all right.
But he gets points for Vinnie Barbarino.
Come on.
Yeah, that was a good show, too.
You know, it is interesting. One of the reasons that we did this was a year and a half ago, Don was running Baltimore County, and I live in the city, and the city has challenges, you know? And we talk about and I was going places where places got better and improved.
Okay.
I was in Washington, D.C. all day on Sunday. I was in New York on Tuesday. I did a little traveling. Spent the day in D.C. I saw lots of nationals, world championship stuff.
Sure.
But more than that, driving in there, I go often. I mean, I'm in D.C. once a month or driving down New York Avenue. And sometimes it really dawns on me, my God, this was, I used to fear driving down this road. I couldn't make a right turn on U Street. And, you know, there were really challenged neighborhoods there 20, 30 years ago. And that city has really become a better place. And a lot of, and I'm sure the education, all of that has become better. We want Baltimore to rise up, and, sure. and we believe the county and the city, we believe it's all interconnected. But Washington, when you said you were from Washington 30 years ago, it was a different connotation than now, right?
Well, you know, back then, I only knew what I knew. I knew my sure. neighborhood. I knew the people around me. And you adjust. You just know that when you go out at certain times, you got to be careful. We had curfews. We had a lot of things happening right in our community. So all I knew was my little community where I grew up, Lamond Riggs. But then as I got older, I started to see what was happening throughout the city. And I think the message then was you had to go to school. You had to get an education. I mean, if you just look in Washington, D.C., all the local universities right there, your doorstop, all the different history, the Smithsonian's, you name it. It's just a lot of history. So education was what we learned and what was a priority, second to church probably for most of my friends growing up. But, yeah, education was important. And then, as you say, as I got older, I started to see we weren't having enough people going into education. So, therefore, there was a decline in enrollment. You started to see the boom of charter schools in D.C. You saw more of the private school sector. And so, you know, for me, I take that seriously as the superintendent of Baltimore County because I got to make sure people invest back into public education. Public education, and, you know, we're preparing for graduation in a couple of months, and we're going to have a lot of our seniors walk across the stage who have accomplished a lot of things, who have dealt with some challenges in life, who have plans for career right after high school, two-year college or four-year college or the military. And we do need to recognize that. Sometimes we don't tell our own story. Sometimes we don't celebrate our own story.
And progress.
So that's my commitment as a new resident of Baltimore County. Got my family here. We love it here. And the work is keeps me up all night. But it's work, important work, because I'm always worrying about opportunities for students. Are our students getting the best? And are we preparing them for whatever endeavor they want to achieve after they finish one of our high schools?
We're going to talk a lot over the next hour about that. It was interesting, Dr. Williams, when I hear you talk about public education, and you said committed to public education. And one of the things that I'm always drawn back to is whether when folks want to talk about private schools or charters, whatever or Catholic schools, you name it, and all of them have a role. But I'm always struck by, and I'd like you to react to the reality is that if we're going to really transform the lives of millions of young people across this country, the way to do that's going to be through outstanding public schools. It's not going to be through any of these other vehicles. React to that and the challenge that you feel as a superintendent and the responsibility for 115,000 students.
That's all. Just
115.
That's all.
Well,
yeah.
115,649 to be close.
And just a few employees.
Just close to 20,000 employees.
20,000 employees.
Yeah. There are 20,000 people employed in Baltimore County. That would fill up the arena twice. Wow. Yeah.
So there you have the superintendent until talks about not sleeping, and you see why. So go back and talk about the responsibility you feel towards public education.
So it's all about, for me, is the vision. What's the vision of education nowadays? So and it's rebranding. Because we have to do some of that rebranding of our schools and our school systems. You know, just like anything, any city, like you talk about certain parts of the United States you've traveled, we're going to have incidents that happen because we got people coming together and either working and living. So you're going to have incidents that happen. But those incidents do not define the schools. They don't define the cities. So for me, the work is really rebranding the importance of education, the importance of public education, because I'm seeing so many talented students in our classrooms, and we just got to celebrate them. I see so many talented staff, our teachers, our paraeducators, our office staff, our administrators, our principals who are running our schools. How do we tell those stories and before others tell a story that may be an incident? It doesn't define who we are. It may define that we have work to do. We have areas we need to focus on, but the importance of education is what we have to continue to invest. We have to invest our time and our energy. I grew up in D.C. All we knew was public education. I went to a college prep high school. We had borrowed books. We were in a building that used to be a junior high school building that was closed. We had staff members that came from all over the city. We got students who came over all over the city.
Did the heat work?
And the heat work. The heat worked, but there was no air conditioning.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if I drank from the fountain.
I don't know.
I don't remember that. But I do remember it didn't define who we were. What defined us was the quality of education that we were getting from those teachers, from those leaders. That's the model I bring to Baltimore County. So we got challenges. We have, like you talked about, heat, air conditioning, water. We have facilities, old facilities. We have...
Not at Dundalk High School. We don't have an old facility. Not at my alma mater.
That's just very proud of his alma mater.
Yeah, they put me in the Hall of Fame over there.
Are you in there?
Yeah, they put me in after they got the new school. And Don came over. You were working for Kevin at the time.
Right.
And I'm telling you, I hadn't driven up Delvale since they had leveled the other one.
Oh.
And when I drove up there, it was literally the first time I had walked in was the night they were putting me in the hall. So it wasn't even, it was surreal because it wasn't like the school that I went to, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really weird. That's but awesome. I walked through there and I thought, you said about progress and about the next thing that education needs to be. You, me, Don, none of us would recognize that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we didn't go to school like that. And even if we went to Loyola Calvert Hall, you know, wherever, it didn't look like that. I'm very, very proud of what you guys did, Baltimore County did for Dundalk High. Then the question is, who's going to teach the children there? What's the curriculum going to be? And what's the progress going to be for these young people 5, 10, 20, 30 years down the road? Because that's where it gets measured.
Right.
I mean, look how good he looks measuring me 38 years later, right? Right?
A success story.
But in all sincerity, you know, we talk about progress and going back to a place, and is it getting better? For you to take over a gig like this, what are the metrics? How will you know a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, the things really did get better at Dundalk High on your watch, or any high?
Well, good question. So we invest in our people. We have to hire the best and train the people. The metrics are student success. When students finish our schools, what are they doing? Our struggle at this point is to really see when kids leave, how do we get that information? How do we get that first year in college? How do we get that information if they're working or in the military? But, you know,
what role could you play in making it a better,
right,
more preparatory? Like you said, college prep, right?
Their input is invaluable. You know, they've lived through this experience and now they moved on to a next chapter in the book. So how is that? Did they feel prepared? So the metric is really around student success. I've been focusing a lot on teaching and learning. I have been to 109 of the 175 schools.
Wow.
I've been into classrooms. I've talked to our students or our staff. I'll go and talk to the cafeteria manager, building service worker, office staff. I want to understand the climate of each school. But the important part is teaching and learning happen. We got to invest in our teachers and our staff because they are right there at the battle line working with 30 kids in a classroom, 25 kids in a classroom all day long. Do they have the skill set? Do we have the resources for them? But the metrics is around about student teaching and learning. Are our students learning? If they are, great. How do we expand that? If they're not, what are we going to do differently so they can achieve and be successful?
Doc, it was interesting, and you and I share a similar background, that we were both high school principals once upon a time. And I remember when central office folks used to visit the school, and they would say something pretty consistently, and it was nice. They would say, love the climate. You know, Don, what you don't understand is that when you visit a lot of schools, it doesn't take you very long to get a handle on the climate of the school. You can pretty much sense it in the first couple of minutes. And I used to think, as a principal, really, that seems kind of interesting. I'm not sure that's true. As I became an area soup, visiting 40-some schools on a regular basis, I can remember thinking to myself, son of a gun, those folks were right. You can pick
Five
it
minutes.
Up. What, so what do you – do you find that to be true?
I do. You know, I think maybe it's because I'm old. You know, after 30-some-odd years – you kind of
about your background. Like, you taught in a classroom as a what and where and when.
So I taught as a high school mathematics teacher at my alma mater. I shared that earlier.
I knew Don 30 years before I realized he was a social studies teacher, because I met him as a guidance counselor, right? And then he was a vice principal. But
Well, great. So teacher, assistant principal, principal of middle, principal of two high schools.
Did you always want to be a principal, though? Did you always see teaching as, I'm not going to be a 30-year class
teacher?
No,
I wanted to be a teacher. I just love the kids. I love my kids. I love the summer breaks and the learning that could happen during the summer breaks. But my goal was really to be a department chair. That was it. If I was going to do anything other than teaching, I would be a department chair. And then, of course, you know, people see things in you. They said, you know what? Why don't you do this committee?
You had that leadership.
You had that leadership bug or whatever that meant. And then I noticed that in leadership, you can make bigger change. You can change multiple schools. You can change multiple classrooms. You can change hundreds of students versus just the ones in your class. So that was just my journey. So I've enjoyed 6 years in D.C. public schools, 25 years in Montgomery County public schools. I just thought I would stay in Montgomery County. I lived in Howard County, and I was just enjoying just that work.
And the Redskins still couldn't get it done, so you had to come to a town where you could play some football games, which you need to do.
Well, let's jump back. Let's move from the Redskins. Jump back for us, because you were talking about the whole climate thing. And when you walk in, you said you've been in 109 of our 175 schools already. So talk to us about what you feel when you walk into schools where one feels really good to you, and I don't want you to name names, and one not so good. What is it that leads to those feelings?
So clearly one can look at, you know, is it clean? Is it orderly? Is there a welcoming environment when you walk into the building? So I kind of look for that when I walk in. I make it a point to go to the office, because one of the hardest jobs are the folks working in the office. So
I never went there.
Sure you did.
You know, I only went there when I was, you know.
No, actually, we can pull his discipline record.
Yeah, I think we could do that.
But to your point, you kind of get a feeling like how it's being run, that office staff and the school. But when I go in the classroom.
It's a crisis management center, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
But the classroom is where I can walk in and just see the climate. You know, are we dealing with behaviors, or are we really teaching? And so in some cases, I kind of noticed that we're focusing on the behaviors and not stretching or really challenging the instruction. And then others, it's just this feel that you can walk in. Kids are happy. You can see they're interacting with each other. The setup of the classroom, is it all in rows, or are kids on the floor, kids in groups? That whole student discourse is very important, particularly as you move up, because you know that elementary, they do it well. When I was teaching, student discourse is in groups back in the 80s, that was frowned upon. What do you mean? You need orderly rows, and you are the teacher. You're standing in the front of the room. The kids should be paying attention. They should be in rows. They should be taking notes. Nowadays, that is not the case. And now I'm seeing that in our secondary schools. You're seeing the student discourse. You're seeing the group work. And so it is a feeling. You know, it's kind of hard to kind of articulate what that feeling is. But there are some things that I look for when I visit schools.
Well, can you, and again, for those of you listening in your car or not watching us on Facebook, we are with Baltimore County School Superintendent Dr. Darrell Williams. Well into his first year, and we're talking education, one of Nestor's favorite topics. You talk about going in and out of those classrooms, Dr. Williams. Can you get a two-part question, I guess. Can you sense rigor pretty quickly? In other words, it's I know it's the word of the day. We all want to see rigorous instruction in classrooms. When you walk in and spend a couple of minutes, do you get a sense of whether it's rigorous and what that means? And then the second part of that question is, in your mind, what does rigor mean in 2020?
Mm-hmm. So the first question, when I go in, I may ask some questions, but I ask the principal, or I may ask the teacher. So a part of us, central office going in, we have to be aware of our curriculum. And so walking into a third grade class, walking into an eighth grade class or 11th grade class, you know, I'm not going to know all of the content, but I will have a gestalt of what should be taught. But then I don't judge. I ask questions. I'm asking questions to get answers and to get some more data points. And so a lot of what I do, I will turn and ask the principal. So, you know, what are you seeing here as you're visiting the classroom? What's working? What's not working? What suggestions would you give the staff member? And so I'm very careful about doing that because I'm only coming in for about 5 minutes. And I don't want folks to feel every time I'm coming in, I'm quick to judge, I'm quick to evaluate. But I do ask, I can tell by the material, just the level of questions that are being asked our students. I went to this second grade class, I won't say the school, but I could tell that teacher was really putting forth some rigorous problems for the students to solve because of the amount of the type of questions. It wasn't just, what is this? Can you name these parts of speech? No, it was more of clarify.
Comprehension.
More at the higher level. Yes, yes. Synthesize, evaluate. If you had, instead of having $10 to buy 20 things, now you have $20 and you want to bring back $5 to your mom at the end of this purchase. So the level of questioning is much more in depth, which is getting to the critical thinking. We got to get our kids to think critically and to write. You know, we can expose, and I think most of our kids can verbalize, they can articulate. But now the stretch, because we got to prepare our kids, we got the state assessments, we got SATs, we got the college entrance exams, we have certification, we got to get our kids to write more. And I'm so pleased with the curriculum at the elementary school level, because they're asking those questions, those higher level order questions, but they're causing our kids to write more, to put it in writing, to actually put words on paper. So that's the rigor that I'm looking for. You can articulate, but how can you actually write that message, write that argumentative essay, voicing your opinion? That's what I'm looking for. Our curriculum has to be there, the written curriculum. The taught is what we're expecting our teachers to do, and that coaching from our administrators and teacher leaders are very important.
I don't know about you, Nestor. I'm getting smarter by the minute.
Yeah,
seems like a good good place to take
all points on all this, because you know, I'm removed from this, and I see these young people, tablets and devices, and I learned no flashcards.
Another whole set. We're going to come back and do a whole segment.
Yeah, I want to learn about modern education. Dr. Darrell Williams here, Baltimore County School Superintendent. I'm having some coffee. I'm out here at State Fair. We're going to be back at Fadley's very soon, and Fadley's going to be here in Catonsville soon. All of our Baltimore Positive available out anywhere you get your podcast, and of course, you've been hearing on AM 1570 as well as in our buyatoyota.com.
Before you go to break, I want to remind people, perfect timing, that we are the place to keep up on the mayor's race. We have.
There's a rumor April 14th is a day you should hold.
That's April 14th in the morning, hold it to hear more about the mayor candidates. But if you want to hear each mayoral candidate speaking in depth, it's Baltimore Positive. Wherever you get your podcast, you can download it for free or go to BaltimorePositive.com. We are with Dr. Darrell Williams. We're going to be back talking more education.
We are Baltimore Positive and WNST.net live from Catonsville with Dr. Darrell Williams. Back for more. Segment 2 coming up next.